He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Nau mai, haere mai, ki tō tātou au huruhuri. Hello and welcome to Our Changing World. Ko Clark and Cannon tēnei. This week, Aotearoa Science Agency Director Damien Christie brings us some stories to get us thinking about data. Where does data come from? How is it converted into information? And how can it be used or misused? Here's Damien.
When you venture on social media these days, doom scrolling, as it's come to be known, it's unrecognisable from 2 years ago. A global pandemic will do that. But amid the debates and misinformation, the vaccination selfies and memes about day drinking, are more and more people sharing and discussing data. Graphs of population movements during lockdown, vaccine uptake rates by age, ethnicity and location, excess mortality statistics. And it's not just scientists sharing this. These days it's Uncle Paul who's just as likely to share his thoughts on the current R value or an issue with the sample size on a study he's read. And while armchair epidemiologists aren't necessarily that helpful, there's also a group of people chanting the mantra, follow the science, like there's a giant machine with lights flashing and bleeps bleeping that just spits out the correct alert level settings whenever you press the solitary giant red button on its front.
I mean, that's not actually what happens, right? Like the politicians take science and the data as one input in a pretty complicated decision-making process that includes accounting for the economy, accounting for social outcomes, accounting for politics and polls. A politician's decision can never be just the science.
Dr. Andrew Chen is an expert on many facets of data, from artificial intelligence to ethics and privacy. He's had a lot to say recently on the rollout of the COVID Tracer app in New Zealand. So does he think the pandemic has helped people gain a better appreciation of the role of data in science?
Data, by in and of itself, may not mean very much. But it comes down to how that data is being used. You know, I think the debates that we've had about modelling, for example, modelling is this area that is now much more in the public consciousness than it was a couple of years ago, because it seems that the outputs of this modelling have significant consequences for our lives, you know, the choices that our politicians are making or in terms of managing the pandemic. I don't think anybody believes that data and science is the be-all and end-all. You know, everyone says follow the science, but of course there are limitations to that. Nobody's going to say follow the science if the science tells you to do something that is completely antithetical to your values.
Are there things that you think people are getting a better grasp of? You know, I saw someone on Twitter this morning, someone who doesn't have any background, presumably in stats or data, saying, oh, look, it's obvious the R value is now above one. You know, that's not something you would have expected a layperson to have said a couple of years ago, is it?
Yeah, well, I think this also speaks to the ongoing democratization of access to information and education. 20, 30, 40 years ago, it would have been very difficult for your average person to suddenly become an armchair expert in epidemiology. Whereas today, you know, you can go online and you can learn a lot of this stuff if you want to. And then it's also about the communication that comes from our media and comes from our government and politics in terms of helping educate people about the important things.
Short of outright misinformation, what are the most common mistakes that you see people make when they're trying to make their own analysis of the data that's available?
So there's lots of different schools of thought here, but there's data and then there's information. So you can take a whole bunch of raw data and put it in a spreadsheet and just give it to somebody. And that data by itself is just a bunch of numbers that are probably not very meaningful. Once somebody is actually run some analysis on it or actually looked at the numbers and had to think about what they actually mean, then they can kind of turn that into some form of information that is actually usable and actionable. There is a level of interpretation in some cases in terms of converting that data into information. There's also choices that are being made around what is important and what isn't. And those choices are informed by our underlying values and, you know, our hypotheses and what we're trying to find in that data. So sometimes the data in and of itself is not necessarily biased, but the people who are trying to analyze the data might be biased. And so that's something that people need to be cognizant of. It's not something that we can just, you know, switch off and ignore. But if we can be cognizant of it, then we can try and communicate that those biases or be mindful of those biases when we're receiving somebody else's interpretations.
And there's lots of examples in the past where the actual collection of the data or the integrity of the data itself is questionable based on the people that have been collecting it as well, right?
Yeah, the people who have been collecting it and the reasons for why they've been collecting it. So if you think about in the past, sort of censuses, for example, a choice to only collect data about British expats versus, you know, intentionally not counting Māori in their data is an intentional choice. And so that causes that data to have issues, depending on your perspective, right? So to the people who are collecting the data, they were quite happy with that outcome, but I'm sure others would have disagreed with that.
Do you think we'll have a better understanding of the value of our own data, the value of these things and how they're collected and how they're used?
Yeah, I think one of the tricky things for people is that we still don't really know or understand how much our data is worth at an individual level. It's obviously worth something to someone, right? Because, you know, companies like Facebook wouldn't collect it if it wasn't worth anything. It's really hard for individuals to really appreciate whether or not they're getting a fair deal out of that. It's also presented to users as a take it or leave it kind of deal. There's no room for negotiation. And I think that there is a growing appreciation that this is perhaps a one-sided deal.
Outside of the pandemic, if it's possible to cast our minds to such, what sort of science is going on, you know, that's very, would you say, data heavy? What's the stuff that most excites you?
I'm really interested in how the government might be able to use data to help address some of our broader societal challenges. And so there's things like the integrated data infrastructure, which, I mean, for all its criticisms and potential weaknesses, like, it is a very interesting and useful source of data that helps many government agencies answer all sorts of interesting and difficult questions. So the integrated data infrastructure is this centralized repository of all the data that government holds about people. And so they got all of the data that used to be held in different departments and ministries and tried to collate it all together. And so it's anonymous, but in theory, you can go in and you could find, you know, the details of a particular person. You can get their educational background. You might be able to get their income. You might be able to get their job history. Now, of course, this is a bit creepy if you think that it's kind of open and anybody can use it. So it is very, very locked down. There are strict restrictions on who can use it and how it can be used. And all of the outputs are checked to make sure that nobody is identifiable in any of the outputs. So you can't find Andrew Chen. You wouldn't be able to look me up in the database. But because there is individual level data, they've been able to design interventions that might be more effective at an individual level rather than in the past having to do that at a sort of mesh block or at a suburb or city level. And so if I think of one example is school deciles. Up until now, school deciles are largely determined at the mesh block level. But with these new models, we might be able to do it at an individual level, which might mean that people who actually need more funding in their schools to get them a better level of education will actually get it, rather than people who just happen to live near people who need that help. So it gives us a greater level of specificity in terms of directing those interventions in the right ways.
Are you hoping that post-pandemic, whenever that time comes, that people will come out, you know, will emerge with a better appreciation for data, a better understanding of how it's used and its role in decision-making?
I think so. I think people are always learning. And there's a lot of things that people need to care about and only so much brain space. I tend to think of it as people having different priorities for why they care more about some things than others. And right now, with the pandemic, data and science is pretty high in the list of priorities for most people. And so they're putting the effort in to learn more about it. You know, some people will lose that interest because it is no longer relevant to them, but a lot of others will hopefully take that forward and continue to be engaged with how data is being used to make decisions that may affect their lives.
Thanks, Damien. That was Damien Christie of Aotearoa Science Agency speaking with Dr. Andrew Chen, a research fellow at COI2, the Centre for Informed Futures at the University of Auckland. This episode was produced by Damien Christie. Sound engineering was by Ethan Alderson Hughes and William Saunders. Tim Watkin is executive producer. Keep up to date with Our Changing World by following the show. And you can do this for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. Check out the show's website at rnz.co.nz/ourchangingworld for photos and links, for access to our huge back catalogue of episodes, and to sign up to our monthly newsletter. And if you want to get in touch with us, we're on Facebook or Twitter at rnzscience. Now, between Bird of the Year and the Fave Plant Competition, if you're into conservation, 'tis the season to vote. And we would also like your vote. Our Changing World is entered into the Listener's Choice category of the New Zealand Podcast Awards, and voting is happening right now. Visit nzpodcastawards.com, click on the big blue button, and drop a vote for Our Changing World. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Claire Kincannon. Kia pai tō wiki.